Arkansas agricultural researchers take their expertise to Rwanda. The Northeast Arkansas Art Museum names a new director, and more on the return of a 1,000-mile bicycle race to Northwest Arkansas. Those stories and more are coming up this week on the News Wrap from the Arkansas Newsroom. Daniel Breen, News Director of Little Rock Public Radio. Each week, we're recapping the top stories from all across the Natural State. We'll unpack the headlines, share exclusive insights, and provide the context you need to fully grasp the issues that matter most to Arkansans. That's this week on the Arkansas News Wrap, coming up right after the news from NPR. This is the Arkansas News Wrap. I'm Daniel Breen with Little Rock Public Radio. The University of Arkansas Clinton School of Public Service is no stranger to international development. Now, one researcher has teamed up with the University of Arkansas Bumpers College of Agricultural, Food, and Life Sciences to bring their expertise to Rwanda. I spoke with Dr. Al Bavon, professor of public administration at the Clinton School, who was part of the team on the ground in the East African nation, teaching the newest generation of farmers best practices for sustainable agriculture.
The Rwanda project came about because Bridge to Rwanda reached out to the Clinton School Impact Center and wanted an external evaluator to assess the work that they've been doing in Rwanda improving the work in trying to improve agriculture. And so they wanted, and they've been doing this for many years, but never really put together a really good impact evaluation. So they reached out to the Clinton School to help them with this effort.
I guess if you could describe the agriculture industry as it is now in Rwanda and sort of where it needs to go, what sort of things you're helping them with?
To just give you some background, Rwanda is predominantly an agricultural state, country. It relies heavily on farming for the most part, and so food insecurity is something that the government itself has recognized, and Bridge to Rwanda has been trying to do its part to help the population improve its agricultural practices and increase productivity. So the significant problem for millions of low-income farmers across Africa in general and also in Rwanda is food insecurity. So traditional farming practices tend to degrade the soil, increase costs, lead to decreasing crop yields, and leave farmers more vulnerable to droughts and soil erosion. So Bridge to Rwanda teaches conservation agriculture, and this has been developed by the Foundations for Farming, and they do this to small farmers in the country, and the focus is on no-till agriculture. So essentially, the emphasis is on training and empowering recent local college graduates, and they place them within the local communities and have them train and empower the local farmers.
So in essence, sort of not trying to teach everyone how to do a certain thing, but teaching the people who will then be teaching others to do a
exactly
certain thing.
Exactly. So the Bridge to Rwanda is essentially based in Kigali, which is the capital. So they work through these fellows, and they are recent graduates, and they teach them the principles of farming, the foundations for farming, and the principles of conservation agriculture. So then they go out to teach the local farmers how to put together these practices, these principles and techniques.
And part of your project, as you said, teaching sustainable farming practices, but also research methods, methods of surveying and things like that. I guess, why is that an important skill to have in the agriculture industry? And sort of what form does that take? What data are they collecting?
The theory of change behind the soil process is that The hypothesis is that if the farmers, learn these tools and they implement them, they will have better crop yields, less soil erosion, healthier soils, and therefore experience greater income and improved well-being for their families compared to those who do not implement these farming techniques. So the only way to find out about this is to go out there and collect the data to determine if indeed these outcomes are being realized in the field. So part of what I do or what I did was to go teach these fellows how to help collect the data that we'll need to assess whether the program is effective or not, how to do surveys, how to assess the soil, how to use Qualtrics, how to engage the farmers, and potentially try to troubleshoot challenges that they may run into when they go out there to collect the data.
And it's certainly one thing to research and have best practices and things like that, but I'm sure it's all never truly perfect. It's when you go to a country and get immersed in the culture and the situation on the ground there. Sort of, how did that inform your approach to what you were doing?
That was very interesting. You read about some of these things in the literature, but it's eye-opening when you get out there and realize that some of the assumptions that we had going in may not actually play out in the field. So there were some cultural nuances that we really didn't think. Well, we thought about them, but we didn't realize how significant they were until we got out to the field. And so what was very interesting about this project was that so I was there with the team from the Dale Bumpus College, but we also had a team here in Little Rock at the Impact Center at the Clinton School of Public Service, and we were giving them information as to what was going on, changes that they needed to make. And so when we practiced the questionnaire with them, and they would point out things that we didn't realize that we should have taken care of, we'll point it out to them, and they will give us immediate feedback. And so we will then work with the students that we were teaching. One of the things that was very significant about this was the importance of faith in Rwandan culture. It was something that we talked about. We knew about it, but being on the field and hearing people talk about it and actually putting it into practice was very eye-opening. And so, we kind of incorporated the need to address that aspect of how faith plays a big role in the implementation of the program.
That was Dr. Alba Vaughn, professor of public administration at the University of Arkansas Clinton School of Public Service, talking about their project to boost sustainable agriculture in Rwanda. The Bradbury Art Museum on the Arkansas State University campus in Jonesboro has a new leader. Julia Winthner brings years of experience from all corners of the globe to the new job. She spoke with KASU's Marty Scarborough about her life story and her vision for the museum's future.
So I'm originally from Russia, from Moscow, where I received my bachelor's in fine arts from the teacher's training college in Moscow. The perestroika started, so I was given a chance to leave Russia, and I left with thousands of Russian people taking an advantage of this newly discovered freedom, and I left to Poland. So I settled in Poland for some years. Oh, my next destination was India, and by and large, Southeast Asia, where I traveled, lived, and had a small business for about 10 years. This was a fascinating experience that I think changed my life ultimately. After India and Southeast Asia, I moved to New Zealand, where I received my master's in art history. Thinking that I wouldn't be a successful artist, I thought I would like to know more about artists who were living before me or who were shaping the art that I tried to be a part of. In my last year of studying in Auckland University, I enrolled in the study abroad program. And with this program, I was able to come to America. So after graduating from the Center for Curatorial Studies, after 4 years, I received my first well-paid job in the institution, and that was University of Central Florida in Orlando, where I became the art director of their art gallery. And this was a fascinating experience. I loved Orlando. I loved Florida, a weird cultural landscape. From there, I moved to the to be the director of the art gallery and museum services at Eastern Connecticut State University, where I worked for 6 years. And that was my previous job. And from there, I came to Bradbury.
I'd like to ask you just to elaborate on a few things you told me about your story. First of all, growing up in Russia, with the choices that you had for an area of study at university, why, beyond just the potential to travel, what else was appealing to you about studying art?
Well, I was certainly not a mathematician, I think, at that time. And the art was a very creative field. And at that time, with my diploma, I would have a stable job, and yet I would be a creative person. So that was an ideal situation for my parents.
Okay. Well, you've made reference to your many travels around the world. How have those experiences been beneficial to you in the roles in which you've served as a curator and as an arts administrator?
Oh, I think without this travel, I would not have become the person I am right now. I think these travels and experiences taught me how to be a multicultural person, how to be a very humble and yet listening person for my colleagues and for my team. It's also taught me how to be open for different experiences and different artistic backgrounds, and how to lead, first of all, serving my team, be a servant leader, but also how to be flexible and think ahead of my time, think about the future.
Well, this will be your third time to be overseeing a museum on a college campus, on a university campus. What do you see as the role of a museum like the Bradbury Art Museum on a campus like A-State?
Well, I think the museum like Bradbury has an extremely important role. It's a community-facing organization, much more than any classroom or much more than any building on campus. That's what people see, community see when they come to campus. They see the artists, they see art, they see us, and that's the impression they will get from visiting campus. I think museums like Bradbury has an extremely important role is a bridge between our campus and our community and the entire world as well.
Well, obviously, Jonesboro is very different than New York or Orlando, but what was it that was appealing to you about the prospect of directing the Bradbury Art Museum on this campus in Jonesboro?
Well, I think the museum has so much potential. And I can make the change as well, much bigger change that I would make in New York or in Orlando. I think I am very attracted to that fact that I can make the change and I can benefit from experiences of local artists, and they can certainly learn from me as well as I'm learning from them. That's the main attraction. And also, the museum has such a great relationship with its community. In my past work, in my past placement, I was always, the first thing that I would always do is to reach out and get to know the community members, the community stakeholders, right? I actually don't need to do this at Bradbury. It's already been taken care of. We have been working with El Centro and El Centro for 15 years. So I really don't need to do that. So it's fantastic. I can concentrate on things inside of the museum, like our storage, our collection needs to be taken care of. So I am excited that it really has a very solid community relationship. I can, of course, help to expand them and expand our educational team, but I can put my energy towards our collection and make this collection more accessible, more serving students entity, which I did in my past employment. So that's what I'm excited about at Bradbury.
That was Julia Withner, the new director of the Bradbury Art Museum at Arkansas State University in Jonesboro, speaking with KASU's Marty Scarborough. A 1,000-mile endurance bike race is returning to Northwest Arkansas later this year. The Arkansas High Country Race will start in Bentonville and offer cyclists the opportunity to explore the region and the state on gravel backroads. Race director Chuck Campbell spoke about it with KUAF's Jack Travis.
We started in 2019 with 1,000 miles running around all over the state. We go through a lot of towns. And it was suggested early on, hey, wouldn't it be cool if you started in a different city every 2 years? Hmm. The idea was spend 2 years in a city, and that way folks might race it the first year, get a feel for the course out of that town, and then maybe come back the next year and see if they can set a record or, you know, ride it even faster. So that's what we've been doing since 2020. We have the course broken up into three loops. So Adventure Cycling broke it into three loops when they published the route. So we have the Northwest loop, and then we have the Central loop, and then we have the South loop. So in 2021, we raced the Northwest loop. In 22 and 23, we raced the South loop out of Hot Springs. And for the last 2 years, we've been racing the Central loop out of Russellville. So the logical progression, it makes sense to go back to the northwest part of the state and race the Northwest Loop. So that's what we're going to do for 2 years.
Another interesting thing about the Arkansas High Country Race is that it's a self-supported race. Could you tell me what that means?
This is bike packing. So you take backpacking, where you're carrying everything that you need, and you do it on a bicycle. And so being self-supported, that means that we don't come out and do things for you. You know, a lot of races, oh, you roll into an aid station and they'll take care of you. Some races, you can even have a support crew out there. You roll up and they'll clean up your bike for you or do maintenance on your bike. They'll have food and drink and all that stuff. We don't do any of that. So you have to find everything that you need while you're out on the course. So you got to go to gas stations. You got to find a place to sleep. You might sleep out in the woods. You may find you a place to get under a roof. Sometimes you end up under a pavilion in the cemetery in the middle of the woods. All of that is all that factors into the planning for the race.
Interesting. And so people figure it out entirely themselves. Do people often bring, you said it's kind of like backpacking. Do people bring tents and a lot of gear with them? Or I guess that's kind of the challenge, right, is trying to figure out what you need and what you can sacrifice for weight.
Yeah. And it's, the guys that are racing really fast, if you can imagine this, they're doing 1,000 miles in 4 days and some hours. So those guys that are racing like that, they're not taking a sleeping bag or a tent. They'll take a puffy jacket and some leggings and maybe a bivy sack, and that's it.
Wow.
And when they sleep, they're sleeping 3 hours, 4 hours, and then they're up and riding again. But the folks that are slower, the back of the packers, when I raced it in 2019, I didn't carry a tent. I took a tarp, took my sleeping bag and a sleeping pad, and I ended up not sleeping out very often. I don't think I ever set the tarp up, but it was nice to have as insurance. I slept in a dugout at a baseball park. I rented a hotel one night, found places like that, slept under a pavilion at a park in a town one time. But yeah, some folks carry a tent. They'll take a full tent with them and do this thing.
Wow. That sounds like a real adventure, like not only an athletic challenge, but just a life-changing experience potentially.
It is. And when we do this thing in October, you folks that live up there in the area, you got to come to the finish line. Because when you finish this thing, you've been by yourself for however many days it is. It took me 8 days and some hours. And so I spent a good part of that 8 days just by myself with my own thoughts. So as soon as you finish, all you want to do is sit there and tell stupid stories for an hour or two. It'll take you an hour or two to get all the stories out that have been building up over this thing, over this route. It'll take a couple hours to get them out. Yeah, this event has been a life changer for some folks. There's a guy that quit his job and started making luggage for bicycles, bike packing luggage, and he's got a very successful company doing that now. And it was because he went on the race and he thought, man, I could make better luggage than what I've got when I'm seeing people carrying. And so he went home and started doing it, started in his garage. And now he's got now he's making a living at it. There's a bicycle maker in, Northwest Arkansas, same thing. Man, I could build a better bicycle than what I'm riding on this race. So he went home and built a better bicycle, and now he's making a living doing it. He has a company building bicycles in Northwest Arkansas. So very literally life-changing for those guys. And I think for everybody that finishes it, they come out seeing the world differently. It's a big deal.
That was Chuck Campbell, director of the Arkansas High Country Race, speaking with KUAF's Jack Travis. And that's it for this week. The Arkansas News Wrap is brought to you by the Arkansas Newsroom, a collaboration between KUAF in Fayetteville, KASU in Jonesboro, and Little Rock Public Radio. You can find this week's episode on any of our station's websites. Until next time, I'm Daniel Brain, and this is the Arkansas News Wrap.